You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
All right, hello everyone, and welcome to a slightly late edition of On the Vine, the podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by the folks here at... Thank you all for listening, it's greatly appreciated, and we're here, even though it's about a half hour after we said we'd start. We had a few issues, but we should be ready to go. And we got a slightly smaller panel than usual due to those issues, but it should be quite a fun show. First, joining me, as always, the editor-in-chief of IvyHoopsOnline.com, my co-host for the show, Michael Toney. Mike, how's it going?
Great. It's a relief to be with you.
And we've also got, on the other side, the other Mike. You know him on Twitter. He's Ivy B-Ball. In real life, he has an actual name, too. It's Michael James. Michael, how's it going?
Very happy to be here. Going great.
It'll be good. I'm trying to get better at hosting all the time, and it'll be an interesting challenge to try to keep the two mics straight while I'm talking here into my own mic, my microphone. So that's enough puns for now. Let's get to it. We're going to start by talking a little bit about the big upset from last weekend, which... not everyone thought was going to be, I was not surprised by this outcome, but other people certainly were. It was Dartmouth taking down the Harvard Crimson thanks to a massive second-half run in Hanover, echoes of last year's 26-2 run, the top of the Crimson in Cambridge. And once again, Malik Gill leading the way for the Big Green. So I want to start by asking Michael James to weigh in a little bit with what the heck happened in this one.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it was free throws. Harvard is not necessarily the world's greatest free throw shooting team. In fact, they may very well finish this year as the worst free throw shooting team in the country. But going 6-for-20 from the line, that's a big time problem. That's even worse than you would normally expect them to do. It sort of all unraveled during that 25-4 run, something in that neighborhood in the second half. And a little bit of that was about free throws. A little bit of that was the culprit for Harvard always, which seems to be Malik Gill having a big game, turning defense into offense. And it unraveled incredibly quickly. You kind of wonder, would the game have been any different if Harvard, which I believe missed, five, six, maybe even seven free throws during that run, if they could have actually hit some of those free throws a greater percentage than they actually did, would things have ended up a little bit differently? But certainly the inability to get points at the line just contributed to this sort of free fall that they were in during that run.
And it makes it easy for a team like Dartmouth to take a guy like Zane Adasamwan out of the equation entirely, right? I mean, that's... someone who you're counting on to be your biggest body, your biggest offensive threat, and if you send him to the line, it falls apart a little bit.
It's hard to go, I think it was 8-for-14 from the field, and finish with wound up being an incredibly poor offensive rating, poor efficiency. It's hard to do that shooting 8-for-14 from the field. So, it was an odd game. It was sort of an extreme version of what Harvard's been this year. But it's I think that the way Dartmouth played down the stretch, they deserved the outcome they got.
Now I want to talk to Mike Toney about the Dartmouth side of the ball, which features Evan Bourdreau, who's having quite a season, but also Malik Gill, who has this sort of weird quality of being a complete non-factor until he's the best player on the floor. What did you see out of Dartmouth this weekend?
Dart's definitely an exciting team to watch. Malik Gill, the reason why he kills Harvard, he's a bona fide Harvard killer now, certainly, is, Harvard's a team, we're going to move the Harvard analysis here to get it back to Dartmouth, but Harvard is not the best team off the dribble, and Malik Gill is really a master pickpocketer when he's getting minutes. Not much significant offensive value there within the framework of what Dartmouth likes to do offensively. But defense can really trip backcourts that are maybe the most appalling versus ours.
Mike, I really hate to cut you off, but the quality of your microphone and audio right now is so bad that it's not comprehensible. So I'm going to give you a couple minutes to poke around with your computer and try to improve your internet connection. And Mike James and I, will just have a conversation while you do that. Sorry to turn you off, but let me ask Mike James what you think about what Dartmouth's been doing this year.
I mean, I have the utmost respect for what Paul and his staff have been able to do up there. I think it was maybe on this program a year ago where I sort of went on a limb and said that Dartmouth would wind up making a run into the postseason. And, you know, they wound up barely making that happen with a huge second half run. It's amazing the level of talent that has been stockpiled up there. Usually losing a guy like an Alex Mitola would have been an utter disaster. And instead, this team is arguably the best of that sort of lower division pack. So really hasn't skipped a beat. And that's not something that, I mean, Dartmouth is a team that's been trying to get out of the 300s for years at a certain point in their history. And now, like, you're losing very good players to top end A10 teams, and you're still being able to continue being a pretty solid Ivy team. That's a credit to what they're doing up there. It's really quite amazing to watch what Paul and his staff have been able to do with this program.
I think part of that is you look at the quality of players that they're getting up there is just a totally different thing. You had Gabe Maldunas, who left, Mitola, obviously, who I always thought, God, that guy was an annoying basketball player to watch, but he was very talented.
Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, Boudreau and Wright, I mean, if Cormier's staff, if they can win Ivy Rookie of the Year, and I really do credit them with the recruiting with this award, I mean, if they can win it 2 years in a row at Dartmouth, that's just, especially given the recruiting environment now in the Ivy League and how many good players are coming into this league, that's something special.
Mike, are you still there? Mike, Tony? Alright, there you go. Alright, well, this is going about as well as the show possibly could. I actually was also just about to try to Google Alex Mitola's stats for this year, but I've been so busy. I'm trying to, I'm producing the show by trying to get the Skype calls working while also doing research at the same time, and then I'm also trying to listen to you enough to be able to lucidly comment on it. So this is quite a situation. Oh, we got it. Alex Mitola is averaging 5 points per game right now for the George Washington Colonials. So let's let me ask you a question, Mike. How confident were you going into the weekend that Harvard was going to win? Because we on our show last week, it was not seen as... I was the only person who picked Dartmouth to win this game. Were you similarly confident on a percent?
Well, as Mike Tony can attest, since he sees all of our picks in our pool, I actually had Cornell and Dartmouth over the weekend. Just because, you know, from a numbers perspective, it was unlikely that all three of those road teams were going to win, and frankly, I felt that Yale was probably the most likely of the three to be able to take care of business. I'd be very interested to see what would happen if Columbia had to go to Cornell again, and play at Cornell with Cornell having Robert Hatter and not shooting 13 for 24 from three. But at the end of the day, you know, I really felt like those two were coin flips, and at the end of the day, you know, one of those two teams was going to win. I don't think anyone could say that, like, you know, oh, I felt real good about Dartmouth. But at the end of the day, I felt good that Dartmouth or Cornell, one of those two would get it done and sort of get that first break of serve for the lower division squads.
Yeah, I have to say, a part of it is just... I thought the matchup was really good for Dartmouth. They always play Harvard really well. I think sometimes that second trip through the second trip through a travel partner, when you basically had no opponents in between there, it seems like Columbia and Cornell has always had that second game is always tighter. So that's kind of my take on why I picked Dartmouth last weekend. They're a good team. You know, looking ahead to this weekend for Columbia, I don't want to see that. You know, I'm worried that first game will go poorly, and then you roll into Cambridge, and you're not in a good situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's a very tough place to win. It's kind of, I've always seen just weird things seem to happen up there. And it's hard to, and I'm a numbers guy, and it's weird to say that, like, just put it that way and move on. But, like, I just, you know, from a sort of a gut perspective, when I watch games that happen up there, I'm always like, something weird's going to happen here. It just seems like it's in this weird, you know, building that, you know, and I've been up there a few times that, like, you know, it feels like they've, like, when a football team grows the grass long on purpose just to screw with you, like, it feels like there's something about that building that does that to opposing teams, and they can get you there, and they can get you into a slog, and they can really just take you out of your game. And I think, what is it, with the backloaded schedule now, Dartmouth is like 7-2 in their last 9 Ivy games. Like, they finished strong last year. They're a tough out at lead, a really tough out at lead.
All right, so I'm not 100% sure what's going on here. This must be really interesting for those of you who are on the other who are on the other side of this. I am attempting to add Philly.com's Jonathan Tannenwald to this conversation, but I am not sure whether it's working or not. hang on. Hi, Jonathan, are you there?
I don't know whether to play the Imperial March or the March of the Resistance. Take your pick, Mike James.
Well, unfortunately, because this is the biggest cluster F of all cluster Fs, the two of you are not actually talking to each other right now. Mike has gone on hold, and now I'm going to have to figure out a way to add you two together. So,
then I'll hang up and you can call me back.
Please do. All right, Mike, are you still there?
I'm here.
All right, now I'm going to try to add Jonathan Tannenwald, who appeared out of Twitter, as he is wont to do, to try to join the club, and now we'll see if he answers the phone.
Let's try this.
There we go. All right.
I hear him.
Now we've got...
It's your mortal enemy, Mr. James. How are you?
We bring the guy with the real information on the call.
Yeah, we've got at Pretzel Logic and at IVB Ball in the same room.
I only deal in narratives and, you know, such things as that. I don't deal in statistics and analysis.
Well, that's then we've got the perfect setup here. Jonathan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm packing to leave for New Haven tomorrow morning.
Excellent. So you're following the Penn weekend ahead?
Yeah, I'm tempted to stick around for Saturday night, but I'd like to go say hi to Mike Martin, so I figure I'll go up to Providence on Saturday.
So we'll really quick get your take on, I don't know if you listened to our conversation about gyms last week. Are you looking forward more to going to John J. Lee or to the Piz?
That's a pretty easy one. I love Yale's gym. I love Yale's gym when it is packed and rocking, as it so often is when they are good. And when another good team comes in, I have lots of fond memories of going up there when Penn was good, which, for those of your listeners who don't know, they used to be. You know, there would be 60, 40 Yale fans, and it would be absolutely deafening in there. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere is great. I guess what, Mike, when were you last there? Princeton, Harvard, or more recently?
Oh, geez. When was the last time I was up there? It might have been back to Princeton, Harvard. Although, yeah, it might have been. With the advent of the Ivy Digital Network, it's harder to get me moving.
Well, I'm still trying to cajole you into coming to the plaster, and I don't have much time left for this year.
I was down there. I didn't say hello. I was down there for the playoff last year.
Yeah, and I wasn't.
Why were you not at the playoffs?
I and the esteemed beat writer on Harvard basketball for the Harvard Alumni Magazine David Tannenwald, Sherry's grandmother, whose 100th birthday party was that weekend. It was last March, right?
I remember that story. I do remember that story from both of you.
All right, so I'm going to here's the situation as we have right now. I've got myself, Michael James at IVB Ball, and we've got Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com all talking to each other. I've also got somewhere in the Skype George Clark, who is the Ivy Hoops Online Tigers commentator, and also Mike Tony, who's the editor in chief of the site. What I'm going to do is I'm going to prompt the two of you to have a conversation about the conference tournament, and you guys are just going to go while I try to get everyone else involved.
By all means.
So let me start with, I'm going to lead with this question for Mike James first, which is, what have you heard about the current status of the conference tournament?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, that's a loaded question.
I think the last thing that's been publicly out there was Gary Parrish's report saying that the presidents would be voting in December. What I had heard over the summer, which I said many, many times, is that there was a push to make it live for this year, for the 15-16 season. That push made it through three different athletic-related committees and then basically went all the way to the presidents. At that point, the presidents had tabled it, and the idea was, or at least the impression that I was given at that time, was that the presidents had tabled it until December. There's a vote. I mean, there's sort of a meeting that takes place in December. Clearly, that's what the Gary Parrish article was previewing. Ever since then, it has been sort of information lockdown. I think that there is still the impression that this is happening at some point. I don't know whether or not they voted on it. I don't know what the outcome was. I don't know if it's going to happen for 16-17 or if it got tabled again. I know very little beyond that. Except that the general impression is that at some point in the future, we are going to see probably a four-team tournament, probably at the Palestra, over the course of 2 days.
I have since heard that Mr. Parrish was premature. And I heard that a couple of weeks, I think, what was it, around the time of the Penn-Princeton game, I believe. And I can't tell you whether that means that a vote was taken or not. Simply to say that anything that has – the impression that I got is that nothing's been decided yet. I know that I am fighting against a very considerable tide here, and that someday – on the technicality, Mike James is correct. At some point, it will probably happen. and I will stand there outside the Palestra with my "this is a bad idea" sign. Or maybe I won't, because that would be really a shot at my journalistic objectivity.
Just so you know, Jonathan, I'm with you on that side of the question, and I believe we have Mike Tony back on the line. Mike, where do you stand on this one?
Just catching the end of the conversation, I am definitely anti-tournament.
Okay.
All right. So
they raised the sock writers well, Peter.
Yeah.
This is where Tannenwald and I are a little different, because he needs two sources, and he has to go through journalistic standards, whereas I'm just sort of a guy who, is approaching it from the betting mindset of what do I think is going to happen, and what does sort of the information or the model say. And from that perspective, I believe that you're going to see it.
But I can't FOIA you is the problem.
What's that?
I can't FOIA you. I've been trying to for months now.
Oh, man.
You won't do it.
What? Well, folks, my Skype quit unexpectedly, which is too bad, because I was really enjoying that conversation. Man, who the hell, it says here there are five people listening to this. Why on earth are you listening to this? This is the worst podcast that anyone has ever done in recorded history. I am going to try to get things reset. Please hold. I don't have any music queued up. This seems like as good a time as any to play the promo for a new podcast, which I have started with my good Sam Tidings and Miles Johnson. It's called Basketball Court. Please listen to the introduction while we wait. Not even this part is working properly right now.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offender.
Next week. In the meantime, court's adjourned. And keep your ears open for our first episode next week. In the meantime.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders.
Wow, this is just the worst. All right, we're going to try to get the band back together. We'll start with Mr. Tannenwald, because I think he knows what he's doing. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, there was just too much anger going out on the internet, and my Skype crashed, so I'm going to try to put the band back together here. Doing a thank you for coming on to such short notice. Now what's going on? What in God's name is happening? So Mike's back. Now Mike James is back, and what in God's name is happening? All right. Here's a phone call.
Here's one. Or do you have to place the call?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll hang up again.
Wait. Stay where you are. I think I've got everyone. I can hear Mike.
I'm here.
Okay, we got Mike James.
And we got Mike Tony.
I'm going to not hit the video camera so that I can save you some bandwidth. How about that?
That will be very helpful. So, again, my apologies for all for everything going on. Especially, I want to just say, George Clark has been trying desperately to get into this podcast for half an hour, and it's just not working out for him, and I don't know why. And there's nothing more I can do to help. Unfortunately, that's kind of where we're at on this. In the meantime, I want to continue with this discussion about the conference tournament, and I think, Jonathan, you were the last one talking.
Well, that's troubles. So I'm against. Let me air my grievance here. This is my. What is this? 14th. Mike, does that sound right to you? 14th season at this?
That's correct. That's correct, sir. 14 it is.
I was thinking Mike James. I think he and I have been doing it for about the same amount of time.
You're 06, well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can confirm that too.
So in my time doing this, there have been schools, programs, including but not limited to Peter's alma mater.
Yes, sir.
Which have given the appearance at least of not investing representative resources to run a basketball program capable of winning a regular season title. And until I'm convinced that all 8 teams are doing that on a regular basis, I'm not really going to be inclined to say that the league is able to have a conference tournament. And I've thought for a long time that a conference tournament was a backdoor way for those teams to get in the NCAAs, and that's why I don't like it.
So you are not a fan of the
that,
Columbia, you're not a fan of the Columbia finishing third and then riding hot shooting to the tournament model?
Was the culture of losing Summit before your time, Peter?
I imagine so.
Mike James, that rings a bell to you, I can tell.
Oh, it does.
please fill me in on what this was. You know, we're relying on institutional memory here.
Oh, it was.
I was there, so.
I don't remember much about it. I just remember that there was some sort of summit on the concept that that Columbia just was not really succeeding at really any of the sports.
Oh yeah, no, that didn't change when I'm a little bit younger than you guys. That has not changed that much.
Let me offer a rebuttal though on the conference tournament point, because when I used to sit at games with Jake Wilson of sort of the basketball U.
The episode that, 7 Luke Skywalker of Ivy League basketball.
Yeah. You know, Jake and I used to go back and forth on these things. And at that time, when I was in school, 05, 06, having a conference tournament would have been incredibly silly. You know, you had one team one of those years, Penn, that was like around the top 100, and everyone else was in the 200s, deep in the 200s. Even a 4-team tournament at that point would have imperiled, like sending the correct representative to the tournament, but by a significant amount. I think I ran the numbers once and it was like Penn had like a 90 some odd percent chance of winning the 14-game tournament, and only like a 60% chance of winning what might have been an 8-team tournament. I forget the exact numbers, but it was significant. That would have been a bad time to have a conference tournament. Now, these days, especially this year, the odds of sending sort of quote-unquote the right team to the conference tournament, or the odds of any given team going to the tournament through the 14-game process and through a 4-game tournament is basically the same. All the teams have basically the same odds. So the idea is that it depends on where you think this league is going to go. And if you think that we are going to go back to that point where we're going to have one or maybe even two dominant teams and everyone else is going to be easily bottom 100, potentially bottom 50, bottom 25, but no one else is going to try, then I'm totally with you. It's a bad idea. It's going to a lot of the time, maybe 1 in 4 years, send a bad team to the tournament, to the play-in game. But I don't think we're headed back there. And in this league, the way it is now, there's really no risk of this like team getting hot and like stealing a bid. It's completely overblown. That leaves aside all the other arguments, which I'm sure that you'll make that I do agree with. But I always like to correct that particular argument.
God, we agree on something. so my skepticism. It's Columbia and Dartmouth were the big two in this. Mm-hmm. Cornell's had its time. Brown, I have over the years put closer to Columbia and Dartmouth, but I have too much respect for Mike Martin. I also, and this is the one factor at play these days that gives me hope that Ivy League basketball can be good enough for long enough to merit a conference tournament, and that is Peter Pilling, who I really like.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's certainly, starting by stealing Al Bagnoli from Penn has not been shy.
He was given it. Well, he didn't.
Well,
he was one of a few.
We can agree to disagree on that, but that's a bold move. And I have to say, I will say, yes, just to support this, the one Columbia game I went to this year, because as you all know, I live a long way away, at Levian, it was actually a sight to see. Peter Pilling was almost the last person out of the gym, talking to every single person in the room, joking with Kyle Smith, hanging out with the, you know, it's. I'm not going to say anything about M. Dian Murphy, not that any of you don't already know what I think about M. Dian Murphy, but it's a totally different vibe up there already, just within the athletic building.
That culture of losing Summit, which was on some homecoming weekend when I was an undergrad, and I managed to sneak into the thing because the Penn football team was up there that day. It was so long ago at this point. I'm looking in the Daily Pennsylvanian's all manner of FUBAR archives. Sorry, Mike Tony, but the website stinks. And I have a former online editor of the DP working for me who agrees with me. Things have changed a lot since then, but back then, frankly, there were times when Columbia cared about beating Penn more than they cared about winning the Ivy League. And you could not buy a ticket to the Penn-Columbia game at Levian unless you bought a season ticket for Columbia basketball, and a half-decent number of Penn fans in New York went on ahead and did that anyway. And only went.
It's not like a season ticket for Columbia basketball is exactly back-breaking.
No, but now you've got an AD who cares not only about Columbia but about the Ivy League as a whole and getting a decent television contract. You've got an AD who made a substantial effort, let us note also, to put a Major League Soccer team in Inwood.
And then this is where John and I's other interest subtly intersects with this podcast, Major League Soccer. Yeah, I mean, it's but the question is, you know, what are you doing about, like, I get that, what is happening? I don't know where, anyway. Now everyone's gone again. This is disappointing. Now I'm just going to rant at myself again. Who is listening to this? If you're listening to this, why are you still listening to this? What is happening right now? Good Lord. All right.
Austin Flamadori was kicked off again.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anytime, you know, Mr. Tannenwald has something to say, that's the end of the podcast.
I did almost betray something that I was supposed to keep off the record, so let's hope it didn't make it. But anyway, Peter Pilling was involved at one point in negotiations to see whether New York City FC could build their stadium on Columbia's campus. That's some pretty serious ambition.
Now, just I don't know if you can say this on the record, what do you think the current status of that is?
It's clear that it's not happening. Why it's not happening is a question that I'm not going to get too far into because I'm not allowed to. I think
all them
great
sources
happens, but
you have.
I don't think it's going to. Anyway, so my whole sort of deep-rooted cynicism about the lower portions of the Ivy League is what also served over time, Mr. James, to inform my cynicism about conference tournaments in general. On which I think you and I probably disagree a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote my junior economic sort of paper thesis on the conference tournament subject. And
I teach at Harvard anymore.
You know, it's a fascination for me. These conference tournaments and why we decide things this way. But at the end of the day, I think that there is a time and a place, and I think we are now in that time and place where they can be incredibly valuable. We're sort of in the sweet spot. And what I always ask is not like whether or not you agree with me on that, but where do you think this league is going? And that's really, to me, where you know, varying, you know, people can disagree. And how you feel about that should determine your view on whether or not it is a good idea.
Well, here's what I wondered. How long is Tommy Amaker staying at Harvard?
Is that a question for me?
Someone's got to give an answer to this. Mike?
for life, John. We all know that, right?
I don't know. I personally would like to see him out of there tomorrow, so... That's not a prediction.
I could construct an argument.
That'd be a good offer.
I could
to have him leave his little kingdom.
I could construct an argument that the most important factor in the success of an Ivy League conference tournament in men's basketball is Tommy Amaker staying at Harvard.
Maybe.
Yeah, you could. Because that would radically change the structure at the top of the league. I mean, I think the forward momentum that the top of the league has, specifically, you know, that top tier, the Yales, the Dartmouths that are looking up. I mean, as much as I disagree with it, I would have to say that the momentum is definitely there for... Was my sound off again?
No, I can hear you. It just sounds like you're coming through It's like you're being put through a meat grinder.
You're calling us from the 116th Street subway station.
Hey, that's a great subway station.
Well, it's better.
It is, but you know, at least if you're at 96, you got some skylight.
Better than the broom closet, right?
So much sass on this podcast. It's ridiculous.
Can you guys put your references in terms of path stations, please?
Yeah.
No, because the only one I bother with is outdoors.
Yeah, the Harrison one is nice. I don't know what about the other. Well, the new one down at the World Trade Center is a fine.
Oh yeah.
Fine station.
Oh yeah.
And I believe there's even cell phone service.
There is indeed.
Anyway, if you can hear me.
Yeah, you're better now. You're better now. I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Well, if you can hear me, and I'm just going to ramble for a second, the entire league, not just Harvard, has the momentum to raise the league up and to make a Ivy Conference tournament feasible on merit, whether or not the concept is flawed, which I would argue it is, but that's a separate argument. But you know, whether or not Tommy Amaker stays isn't going to necessarily make or break the future of the welfare of the Ivy Conference tournament model.
Here's my counter to that. If you believe that Harvard's success has raised the bar and raised all boats and whatever else, when he goes, who succeeds him?
Financial aid.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, is Tommy Amaker the man, the reason why Harvard is attracting these recruits, or is it Harvard's certainly aggressive attempt to get into the basketball game that would survive no matter who the next coach of Harvard
is? Well, I will ask a question I've been asking for much of Tommy Amaker's tenure, which is, if Frank Sullivan had been accorded the same resources that Tommy Amaker's getting, how good would he have been?
Well, that's a good question, but that's ultimately kind of a dead end answer. I mean, that's looking back to 2006 now, and that's a long ways away from where the league is right now.
I'll put this to Mike Jane. Who's the better game coach?
Is there a Fifth Amendment here? Can I plead that one?
No, you know, this is actually not basketball court. This is a different podcast. And this is a one man tyranny situation. So you have to answer the question if I say so. So yes.
I obviously got a close look at what Frank Sullivan can do. I actually have gotten a close look at when I was there at what Frank Sullivan can do with varying levels of resources. From a recruiting perspective, I think that Frank Sullivan could have ultimately won an Ivy League title at Harvard for sure. I mean, some of the names that he was in on that sort of, you know, wound up at say Princeton or wound up outside the Ivy League sort of in the late 90s when he had teams that were pretty good themselves. I think he had enough that he could have pushed maybe in one of those down years for Penn Princeton to really take a run at it, and especially during the vacuum that occurred after 2007. But would he have done anything remotely resembling what Amaker has done? Would he have ever had a top 50 team at Harvard? Almost certainly not.
He had enough time to do it. He had enough time to accomplish it.
He might not have gotten the top 50, I agree with that, but think about the kind of talent that he might have been able to put around Matt Staley or Jeremy Lin.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think that after the unfortunate academic issues that happened during my freshman year, he got really hamstrung in the recruiting game. And to the extent that he was already a little above where everyone else was in terms of what he could go down to in the AI, that was dramatically raised, and he had almost no shot at recruiting anyone. And you know, it was a matter of time before he was going to have to find his way out, just because I didn't think Harvard would put up with being at the bottom of the league for that long, and that's all they were giving him in terms of the standards that he had to fight against.
Who was the other big besides Staley, whose name I'm blanking on?
Brian Cusworth.
Yes. Yeah. Those teams had talent.
Yep.
And I think that I'm not saying they would have been to the level that Harvard is now, but I certainly think they could have won a league title at some point. And I do remember I was at the press conference when Amaker was introduced. This was back in the day when Jake Wilson had people writing for his website. And I got on the train and I went up there because I wanted to be there. And the first person that Tommy Amaker thanked was the person from the admissions department who was in the room. And we all know how that turned out.
We sure do. Although it didn't help them beat Dartmouth this weekend, which...
That's shocking.
So you were...
James knows well, and all of you know well, I am astonished any time Harvard loses.
Well, it's my personally, it's my favorite thing in the universe when Harvard loses a basketball game. And I'm certainly hoping they'll do it again this weekend. But
well, is that a segue?
Yeah, I'm actually. I do want to.
Sure, it sounds like one.
I do want to get into. We've got about 15 minutes left here.
Some of us say that about another school in the conference.
Is it a team that wears a lot of orange?
Possible.
Well, I do want to get to this weekend very quickly, and I wanted to touch on. So we have about 15 minutes left. I'm going to ask Jonathan first because you're the one who's suddenly appeared out of nowhere to be in this program. You've got Penn at Yale, Penn at Brown. Do you think that there's any chance? What do you think Penn's odds are in those two games? What are you looking for?
I think that if Penn was playing Brown on Friday, they'd have a decent chance of winning. I had a nice little conversation with my colleague Howard Gensler of the Philadelphia Daily News, who is as well connected to Penn basketball as anybody you will ever meet, about it today, because we're actually both going up to New Haven tomorrow. Penn's probably going to get thumped tomorrow night, and the question will be, how many minutes do Jake Silpe and Jackson Donahue play on the first Friday night of their careers? Because they're going to hit a wall on Saturday if they have expended too much energy in a game that the odds of them winning are really small. And, oh, by the way, it's a gym that Penn always struggles in. And I see no reason why that would be any different this time around. So, look, I think there's a very real possibility that they go 0-2, which will be disheartening. I think there's something of a possibility that they go 1-1, and if they do, I think the Penn fans ought to be reasonably happy, because it means that right out of the gate, at least on the assumption that they're going to lose Friday, if they would win Saturday, it means that rather quickly they figured out this whole weekend.
Which would be, I mean, that's not even half the battle in the Ivy League, is dealing with that travel arduousness. Especially, I don't know, I feel like if you have the harder game the first night, you can sometimes get trapped in that second game.
Yes. And I don't know how they're going to put a lid on Kwakumensa.
Yeah, I mean, you're counting on what, a big game from Nelson Henry? Like, on defense there?
Amazing things to me about Darian this season. His movement is better than it's ever been that I've seen. His catching of the ball is better than I've ever seen. His shooting of the ball is worse than I've ever seen.
He's not finishing. He's not finishing anything. No. I mean, the bottom line for DNH has not gotten much better. I mean, his rebounding is a little up. His points are a little up, but his efficiency really isn't where it ought to be by his senior year. I mean, he's got a little bit of time left. He's gonna have to pick it up and start finishing some of those bunnies.
It's not coming. I mean, I'm just convinced at this point that it's not coming, and it's probably meant.
Oh no, I am too. I am too. Yeah,
he's only got 13 games left, right? You know,
it's no, like, this is it.
All he had to do mentally to get himself in sync. If he hits the shot at the buzzer against Princeton, I bet you it snaps him out of whatever's in his head.
And yet, it didn't.
Possibly, but we've seen him do well against Princeton and upset the Tigers before, and then Penn instantly reverts back to, bad pen.
Sure, but that was, yeah, but that game would have.
I mean, yeah, we'll never know.
I'm entering into narrative territory, and Mr. James is not going to like this.
This sounds a lot like when Columbia fans get on Mauro Lowe for his production, quote-unquote, slipping this year, because Darian Nelson-Henry is shooting like 60% from two. So he's finishing a lot of shots.
He's taking so many shots.
It's when that 40% negative is coming, though. I would not put him on the same, you know, the same plane as Matt Lowe. Matt Lowe tends to deliver when he needs to deliver. I would not say that the same.
I feel like the difference is Matt Lowe. The issue is with his counting stats, right? Like people are looking at it and saying like, oh, it's three points per game fewer than last year. But the reality is he's making the shots when it matters. It was big threes from him in both Cornell games that broke those games open. I don't think that's the same story with DNH.
And DNH was never asked to lead a run to a title.
That's also true. I think if you thought Penn was going to win the title this year, you know, I've got some land you can buy.
Columbia's aspirations, Mauro Lowe has a lot to do with.
Yeah, as they should be. He's got the cast. He's got the surrounding cast.
Right. Anyway, what I was going to say a minute ago, two games, everybody did this. We all did. The two games at the start of the year that everybody circled were the Princeton game because it was Donahue's first Ivy League game and you want to try to put some buzz back into the rivalry. And the Harvard game because in a year when Siani Chambers is out, even though, you know, you never wish an injury on anybody, if you're going to get one over on them, this is the year to do it. And that's clearly not going to happen.
No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think, the key matchups for this weekend are obviously, you know, we're talking about Penn, but really Yale-Princeton on Saturday night is the marquee game, and that's going to be happening at the same time as
tremendous game.
Columbia-Harvard is the other big one. And, you know, I think what you're saying about, you know, Penn wanting to get one over on Harvard, I cannot express to you how strongly every year my hatred of the Harvard basketball team grows. And I think Columbia, at least for purely, I don't think I'm alone in this sentiment, and I think purely for emotional reasons, both this game at Leviades, which last year was a barn burner. I don't know if anyone remembers this. This is the game that Jeff Kobe tied with a three-pointer. Siani went right back down the court. 2 years ago, the unbelievable phantom call on Valentine's Day that sealed it for the Crimson, which was followed by Harvard clinching the title against the Lions in Cambridge on a night Columbia didn't show up. 2 years before that, or the year before that, was the snow game where Steve Frankowski scored like 30-odd points against Harvard. There's a real rivalry there, and I think there's like, I say this because I'm a Columbia homer, of course, but I also say this, I think Columbia has the most interesting setup this weekend where they're going to have to go to Dartmouth. They've got to win that game, and then they're going to have to go and play what I imagine will be a very emotional game against the Big Green, against the Crimson. And I want to give Mike James a second here because he promised me he would slander Columbia on this podcast. I'm going to give him a chance to do so.
Proceed, counselor.
Last week when Columbia went to Cornell, they took care of business. It's a 14-game tournament. It's a small sample. You need some luck. But frankly, that result was somewhat lucky for them. The 13 for 24 or so they shot from three, that's not going to happen very often. And I think Cornell actually played a very strong game. And I think that if Columbia had not been able to shoot as well as it did, I think it would have run into a lot of trouble up there. And potentially could drop that game.
It doesn't give you any pause to say that, you know, Cornell played basically the best possible game. That, like, short of having Robert Hatter, they played the best possible game plan they could have played. And Columbia still put up 77-70-odd points on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big luck-adjusted guy. So, like, it wouldn't have been that good had they not shot that well from three.
Yeah, see,
which
luck-adjusted
sort of
to me is a way of saying, like, I wish that it hadn't happened, you know? Like, no, I mean, in my mind, Columbia only makes an average number of shots.
that's sort of what it is. It's a question of, did the team do repeatable or non-repeatable things to win the game? And I think to some extent Columbia did non-repeatable things to win that game and got lucky that Robert Hatter wasn't playing in either of them. But that doesn't matter. They went 2-0. It's a small sample tournament here, and that's all you're trying to do. The question is, what's going to happen this weekend? And I think Columbia is in a fantastic situation now because they really only have to split. They're going to be favored on night one. And if they don't get that game, they still have the opportunity to go in the next night and knock one of their competitors essentially out of the race and put themselves in very solid position still at 3-1 through three road games already. So I think that, you know, their weekend is basically just don't get swept and you are incredibly happy with how you've done. And that's a great position to be in this early in the race.
I agree with you, but Columbia finds itself in a position that Penn and Princeton have been in many times over the years, which is a trap of overlooking that Dartmouth game and thinking too much about Harvard.
Yeah, and they struggled mightily last year against Dartmouth in both games. I remember sitting courtside at the one in Levian and just the whole time thinking, like, why are they not taking control of this game? Why are they? And then just at the end, all of a sudden, Dartmouth kind of slowly stepped on the gas and ran away with it. There's something about the matchups there that Columbia really struggles with. So I agree that the position for Columbia is really good. And, you know, in my heart of hearts, they pull out, they win both these games, and they're off to the races. But what I worry about is that they come out in that first game, they're flat, they struggle with Dartmouth, and then they show up in Leviades off a loss the next night, and I don't know, man. Something about that feels really bad to me. That's just the force. You know, I'm reaching out and I feel a disturbance and, you know, I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, Dartmouth should not be a track game. I mean, you cannot overlook the Big Green when they just beat the other team that is right beyond the track game.
And that should help Columbia in a big one.
That should, yeah. I mean, it's breaking well for Columbia, especially that down the stretch of the Ivy slate, they're going to finish with a lot of home games, and it's going to be Yale that's traveling.
Well, and they're also Columbia is also in good shape because of the injury situation is rounding into form. I thought Rosenberg had a couple good games against Cornell. You're going to be getting, like, Isaac Cohen is a very divisive player in that when he's out there, he does a lot of little things, but you're really sacrificing offense-type things from him in terms of no one has to guard him. But also, I think underrated is having Lucas Meisner back as that third big who can shoot a little bit. He rebounds. He's tough. He'll commit fouls against St. Adasamwan, which is like an important thing because that guy's terrible at free throws.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're starting to give me ideas here for next weekend.
Well, I'll tell you this much. And something I posted on Twitter today, Columbia this weekend is 50-50 to either split or the combination of getting swept or sweeping the weekend. So very interesting there because you go on that other 50% and you say to yourself, either they're imperiled in the race or they are the front runner essentially. You know, and then on the split side, that's what you'd normally, I mean, that's where they're more like they're fine. But if they get swept or they sweep, you know, they are either really, really sort of on the outside of this race or they are smack in it and probably the favorite. So it's a crazy weekend for them.
Well, if they sweep it, if they win the league, as I said at the start of the show, not that anybody's listening anymore. As I said at the start of the show, if they win the league, you might just get me on a conference tournament. So there's the stakes for Kyle Smith.
And I'll also say, you know,
he'd like to lose if that was the stakes.
something though that always comes up with these is, you know, part of the reason we're talking about, like, this third weekend of the regular, you know, this is the first full weekend of back-to-backs, and we're already talking about, like, these are pivotal games. And I do think one thing that I worry about with a conference tournament is you lose that element of league play where you have these, the back-to-backs, you have the weirdness of refereeing in the Ivy League on certain nights.
No.
You know, you have you have the drama start very early, and I think that there's something to be said for maintaining that tradition.
You know, for some of us, this weekend used to be the start of conference play. Not the second.
Oh,
game,
man. We have minor technical difficulties, and now we're just exposing all the wounds of the Ivy League to criticism.
Well, I will say this about the referees. Reggie Greenwood was at the Big Five doubleheader. And I walked up and I said, look, Reggie, who I know pretty well. I said, look, man, how was that a foul on Matt Howard?
He jumped straight up.
To his great credit, he explained to me how it was a foul on Matt Howard. And
you
he almost convinced
me to pay the refs.
Yeah.
Well, I joke about liking the referees, but in reality, like, I'm still the anger that burns in me over that Rosenberg block charge in 2014 mm-hmm. is still, like, anytime I think about it, it goes deep into my soul, and it's not very good.
It puts in a primary and a secondary defender, two different types of rules.
Shut up. They didn't call a single offensive foul that entire game.
Some of us covered this league before there was video replay of controversial calls in it.
The video replay hasn't helped much of anything. They spent video replay doing things like, you know, they spent 5 minutes trying to figure out who the ball tapped out of on a 15-point game.
Whether it should be a flagrant one on Justin Sears.
It must take 10 minutes
to decide that.
I will charitably give Mr. James the following. There was a rather famous shot of recent years in Ivy League basketball history that occurred after the buzzer. And because there was no video replay that night, the world will never know.
Is that the Douglas Davis shot that you're referring
to? No. Davis, they have replay. This was Zach Rosen at the Palestra against Harvard in a game that went to double overtime.
Yep.
What was it? At the end of the first?
Well, was that the end of regulation or the first? Harvard won it, so I'm not too concerned about it. But.
I know you. That's why I'm being charitable, because it's the game.
This feels like Festivus.
You have a weird definition of charity, Chandler. Yeah, all right, we have about 2 minutes left, so I want to just we're gonna go around. Everyone gets like two sentences. I want one prediction from each of you. Something that's gonna happen this weekend. I'm not gonna restrict you, but I want to get your thoughts out there on the table. I'm gonna start with Mr. Tannenwald. One prediction.
How far out on a limb do you want me to go?
Go as far as you want, man. It's a sturdy tree.
I am going to hazard a venture that Levitis will not be full on Saturday.
Wow.
Man, you're inside the tree.
am I wrong, Mike?
You're inside the tree, man. You didn't even go outside.
I don't think it will be full on Friday, I can tell you that much.
Mike, what's one, Mike Tony, what's one from you?
Probably that we hear some more bogus out of CBS Sports about the Ivy tournament.
Bravo, sir!
And Mike James, what's one from you?
I think that one of the two road teams on Saturday night, Columbia or Princeton, will win, and they will become the new favorite in the Ivy race over sort of the other teams.
Wow. Thank you for giving me an honest-to-God prediction there.
I really should be in New Haven on Saturday night only to see James Jones' reaction if he loses that game.
There's nothing actually quite as much fun as James Jones losing a game. I remember after the Columbia game last year, he said on free throws, which might be this might be relevant to a different New England team, he said, I think we would have better success on free throws if we had tried kicking the ball in the basket. which is a pretty good line. All right,
he's a great interview after losses. I remember that from my time.
He's great. He's still great.
All right, so this is the end of the show. I want to say very sincere thank you to anyone who's been trying to listen to us. This is the worst podcast episode that I've ever produced in my entire life, and I'm very sorry. I want to say thank you to Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com for coming on to such short notice. You can follow him on Twitter at like 50 different accounts, at PretzelLogic, at The Goalkeeper, all these other things. John, thanks so much.
I'll see you. Hopefully, the Bay Area in June.
Hey, come to Seattle. I'm going to be covering the Union in April.
All right.
We got Mike James. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Happy to be here.
And he's IVB Ball on Twitter, but you knew that already. And Mike Tony, the generalissimo of Ivy Hoops Online, has just disappeared, which of course makes perfect sense given the way the shows are going. But Mike, I'm sure would say something like, "It's been great to be here." Thank you, Peter, as always. So, I've been Peter Andrews. This is On the Vine from Ivy Hoops Online. We'll be back next week with hopefully a less terrible show. Have a good weekend, everybody.